everybody. Welcome one and all to the latest foray into this ongoing musical journey. We are now chugging along down the track here with episode 22, I want to say. And we're getting back into our like monthly groove, which I would prefer would be more like every 2.5 or 3 weeks. But I'm just pleased that we're hitting our fourth or whatever episode for the year. So a happy springtime season to those of you who live in the hemisphere. I'm assuming most people here are listening to this from the northern hemisphere. And yeah. Matt Stranick as ever, and Dan. How are things, Dan?
Hey. Not too bad, not too bad. I just turned 48 recently.
Whoa.
Yeah. And doing okay. Yeah.
You had an anniversary too, did you not?
Yes, exactly. Well, my girlfriend and I actually met at my birthday party 1 year.
Because
she ended up coming with a mutual, she ended up coming to the party with a mutual friend of ours, and yeah, that's how we met. So it's always been easy to just have, and it was like the party was the night before my actual birthday. So yeah,
that it's like for people who have like a birthday around Christmas or like a New Year's or something like that. It's like you do a bundled holiday kind of deal, right?
Yeah. Sort of. It's an excuse to just like spend the weekend doing stuff, you know?
Like, or like have a long weekend even.
Exactly, exactly.
Figure your vacation time and such just so.
Yeah. Yep,
oh, radical. Sure. Significant life goal achieved.
Yep.
As much as a lot of people don't get to be 48. That's how I look at it. I'm turning 46 here last month. But for me, it's like, I'm just like, it's the alternative at this point.
Exactly.
Decrepitness hasn't really started to set in yet, you know. So I got as much time as, you know, fate willing will allow before I start to go down a path wherein of pain and rheumatism and arthritis, God knows what crap else the elderly are afflicted with. God bless their elderly hearts. Anyway, well, dude.
I was going to say, if I can just, since things took kind of a morbid turn, my shirt kind of ties in with, you know, an artist that's definitely related to things we've talked about on the show in the past, recent brush with death. It's wearing a shirt from, I'm wearing a shirt from pro wrestler Darby Allin, who I think about a week ago, as of when we're recording this, saved Raymond Pettibone from getting hit by a bus in New York, and what? Jumped. Yeah, I think they'd actually be, because Darby Allin's also like an artist and filmmaker and like pro skateboarder and a bunch of other things. But I think a Renaissance person who injures themselves a lot in the course of what they do most of the time, including by, you know, saving punk rock visual arts icons from getting hit by buses while the two of them were on the way to see a Broadway show together, I guess. Yeah, Darby Allin posted on his Instagram a picture of him with like in the hospital with like a broken nose and several other injuries, you know, saying like, oh, Raymond Pettibone's alive at least,
like,
you know.
SST artist, yeah.
Yeah, Raymond Pettibone, who did, yeah, all the Black Flag.
Yeah, that's actually,
all those,
that's
exactly.
Brother,
yeah.
But,
yes, 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 exactly. Apparently they had, you know, they were like getting together for, you know, in New York, and in the course of it, Raymond Pettibone almost got hit by a bus, and, you know, Darby Allin got hit by said bus instead while saving him. So I was like, I figured I'd wear the shirt while recording, you know?
That's next level karma stuff right there.
Exactly.
In a way. Yeah.
How are things with you, Matt?
I sort of was like, so I guess folks, to speak to it, we have moved on, I think, for this episode. We kind of had something plotted out, but we've sort of put that to the next episode. Always good to have some content in the can, as we say here in the media biz, because we are a slick media enterprise, make no mistake about it. And so, that being said, we've chosen, I guess, what we would call an open format for this show. Dan, I'm sure, I'm fascinated based on what you told me in the Facebook here to present to us. I'm taking a rather different tack with mine, because I've been in this sort of, to speak to your inquiry, your kind inquiry as to my currency and whatnot. I'm taking a definite move in the past week or so into downsizing the shit out of my material imprint, which means that I'm getting rid of, have gotten rid of at this point, about 70% of a significant vinyl collection. And the fact that I still have like 3.5 goodly sized storage boxes sort of speaks to, you know, like I only kept the 300 that I really couldn't, you know, justify getting rid of under any circumstances, which I feel is, you know, choosing the music that you really value. But as an ancillary to that, you know, because I'm trying to shrink my material imprint down to what will fit on one cross Canada air flight with a maximum baggage allowance. So whatever that is, 6 or 8 bags, whatever you have to do before they make you buy another ticket. And you know, whatever can fit into one hotel room. I'm not going to own any furniture. I've taken this concept, and what I've actually sort of found going through my boxes of just my, I don't carry around much, you know, accumulation of stuff. But one thing I did while I was just buying shit ton of records all the time, as viewers of this show may have remembered, because it does go back almost 2 years, I've got more than a good fistful here of download codes. Every record that I got almost came with, you know, some variety of a download code, which is a very neat concept in terms of streaming. It's just like, well, you know, so, but what it means is I've gotten a metric shit ton of records removed from this apartment now. So what I think I'm going to do, just for my contribution to the open format episode, is I'm just going to reach in here and literally pull out a download code and just go, oh, okay, I still have this, or, oh, okay, I don't. And I'm going to do that about times 5. And I'll wind down my intro pitch here, except to say that I really almost went with before this was like, I'm going to talk about Bandcamp, because I've rediscovered Bandcamp, and I thought we could
I love Bandcamp.
We could almost do like a whole Bandcamp just full-on episode, so I sort of put that aside, and the reason I've rediscovered Bandcamp is because for people who are familiar fans of Leatherface, the band Leatherface, Frankie Stubbs, the singer, actually had a couple of really awesome bands while Leatherface was on hiatus for what ended up being 5 or 6 years in the 90s. And one of those bands, the one that I personally enjoy the most, is called Jesse. And Little Rocket Records out of Sunderland, who have been responsible for putting out some very awesome reissues of Leatherface records, their latest project that just came out is a double LP. I'm still waiting for the LP, but you know, the primary way to get it in the first place was through Bandcamp. And so now, like, I've just been... It's a complete discography, 22 track thing, and it's got some of my favorite Frankie Stubbs songs on it across his significant career of as a songwriter and everything else. So I'm just like, I haven't really been listening to anything other than this since it was released on Bandcamp like 3 days before it hit Apple or whatnot. Mm-hmm. Just came on Apple on Monday. I've been listening to this stuff since Friday when it came out on Bandcamp. So that's my number one that I shoehorned in. And I'm just going to say it's friggin' lit. And now anything else that I pick from is going to be a random pick from the box of download cards, making this the easiest way to possibly prep for an episode that I could justify at the time. How about you? What's your first pick, dude? What are you going to tell us about it? I'm curious about your whole description of this.
Well, it's just all my... I kind of just had one big pick. As in just like... I don't know. I guess this all ties... I can sort of tie it into like the birthday recently and getting older And also, it's funny you mentioned Bandcamp, because I was thinking, like, you know, it's not often that there's something like really new and exciting that I hear that just is like something totally different to me. I think the last time that really hit, something really hit me like that was via Bandcamp, the band MS Paint that I've talked about on the show quite a few times. But yeah, like their demo that they released in 2020, that was something that I discovered through that platform as well. And so, yeah, Bandcamp, very, very pro Bandcamp. But I've been feeling like my musical listening had been in a bit of a rut lately. Okay. You know, like kind of recently, like other than like stuff on themes for show prep, there hadn't been right. a whole lot. Like I'd been doing more like listening to podcasts and stuff, and not a lot of just like having music on. And I just hadn't really been grabbed, hadn't seen something that just like, this is new and different and exciting to me. But that kind of, you know, I finally did see something that seemed kind of new and different and exciting to me, even though it's drawing on, you know, some pretty old traditions, even that are just something, I don't know. It's a topic that I feel like I could talk about, feel like
in you needed some kind of new
exactly
some new kind of kick.
I needed there, some new yeah. kind of kick or something that it just seemed a little interesting. And I feel kind of like, you know, I feel saying like, oh hey, I was watching live streams of Coachella seems old and cringy in a lot of ways, but I think it's interesting that festival does live stream all of the performances there. And there are a couple bands that I do like that were on the bill this year, like Narrowhead and Military Gun, that I've mentioned on the show before also. And like a lot of artists.
What's the name of this thing that you're the streaming thing, this entity that you're
Coachella, heard? You know,
oh, Coachella,
you know, the big thing. Yeah. Yeah. And that whole thing. Yeah. Every year they live stream everything kind of in a loop over the course of the festival on YouTube.
I enjoy misery following it. I'm always like,
oh yeah. And it's like, there's some artists that like, yeah, like I said, like Narrowhead and Military Gun that I like. And like my girlfriend really likes Chapel Rowan, who is like one of the kind of breakout artists on it this year. And, you know, there are some other things that, you know, it's just like No Doubt did a reunion, and like
some cool
Sublime played with with the guy's son, and the bass player fully looked like fucking, you know, rock and roll surf bump Danny DeVito.
And danced with his alien like, and Black Song. Fuck.
Pardon?
Incredible, man. Moments.
Yeah, so it was definitely something. But
so anyways, it was dope.
So just we were kind of checking out the live streams throughout the weekend, and yes. I put it on just at random during one channel and was like, saw an artist that just, I got to say, just totally blew me away, who was playing in a musical genre I just wasn't that familiar with. That in that time, I'm the kind of person that if I find out about something interesting, I end up trying to like learn more about it, and sometimes I go on pretty big, you know, I'm that kind of neurospicy in that regard, as you might have guessed after, you know, a year or so of doing a podcast with me.
Getting on 2 years, dude.
Getting on 2 years, I guess. Yeah, like in that time you might have, yeah, anyways. So I got to say, it almost reminded me of like a pro wrestling entrance, the beginning of this guy's set. Because it was like, it started out with like a blackened stage, and then like all this lettering, or like all these like sort of flashes of like news articles and stuff about like, you know, government censorship of, you know, these Mexican corrido singers because of talking about like the realities of life under the cartels and stuff like that. And then like an AI Morgan Freeman voice was talking, you know, started booming out over the audience about like, you know, like reading this monologue about like, you know, the people who rise up from the darkness, you know, to grow and take power and that sort of thing. And then, this guy Peso Pluma took the stage, who's a 24-year-old singer from northern Mexico, who is like, he's Mexico's number one star. He's like the top of the Latin pop charts now and like Spanish language pop charts and stuff. And like, I never, you know, I am a 48-year-old, you know, French and English speaking white dude from Nova Scotia. And like the Mexican regional sort of umbrella of musical genres is really on the rise on the charts right now, like in the US, but it hasn't crossed over so much here, you know? And I wasn't familiar with even like the bigger artists in the genre. And I was just totally impressed by this guy's set. And I sat and watched like the entire 45-minute thing. And then I spent the past couple of weeks like checking out his music, a lot of checking out his music and just the whole subgenre that he works in, Corrido Tumbado, which
Corrido Tumbado.
That's what it's called, which is basically trap corrido. Corridos are like, it's like a form of like Mexican narrative ballad that goes back to like the Mexican Revolution, like 200 years. And you might be familiar so with this.
They're operating within a
exactly
they're operating within a very established tradition.
Yeah, but like with a very modern take on it. And even like there is the subgenre that you've probably heard of, narco corrido. That like
I wish I was cool.
A lot of people do mostly know of because of like the cold open of this one episode of Breaking Bad. But you know, it's like a style that goes back to like the 60s. Because according to, I know this is another like dorky old white guy thing to say, but according to an NPR documentary I listened to this past week about the whole like Mexican regional crossover into the charts, I guess, you know, certain activities are like the fourth highest employer in Mexico. And that's why, you know, stuff like the narco corridos were, you know, such a big thing. And it's, you know, there's this whole wave of artists that are taking sort of from that style and just like this old traditional ballad style and mixing it with like modern hip hop influences. And, you know, for lack of a better term, vibes, even though it's like almost entirely like arranged on like acoustic guitars and brass instruments and like stand up bass, you know, occasionally accordion, like no percussion most of the time. Like, and, but just like, yeah, like this guy Peso Pluma set, he had like a full set of backup dancers and everything. And yeah, like the whole like AI Morgan Freeman going on and all that during his set. And then like, you know, a whole full horn section wearing like skull face masks. And yeah, it was just like,
I was like, God damn. Like, are there masks involved in this? But I was like, nah, they're not going to do Mexican wrestling. I was like, yeah, you know,
no.
Imagine about this is like so two-dimensional and mask. Okay, good. I'm glad I'm not a total dweeb. I mean,
though one of the other big artists, in the guy who sort of coined the term Corrido Tumbado, Natanael Cano, his first breakout song had a guest appearance by Bad Bunny, who is another, he's like a Spanish language rapper you've probably heard of, who has had a couple of the best best matches on the past couple of WrestleManias, because he is, you know, he's been their celebrity involvement on a couple of occasions, and is like, when WWE was trying to like break into the Puerto Rican market, that was like the local celebrity they used to like try and, you know, get more sort of like just randoms in off the street, was, you know, having Bad Bunny like trained to like actually wrestle in some matches, and he's quite good. But anyways, yeah, Peso Pluma, he's I guess it's his name, literally his stage name literally translates to featherweight. He's a skinny little guy with a mullet and kind of a raspy voice, who's about 24 years old. He's been making music for about, like, his first big single was about 3 years ago. It was a song called El Belicón, which translates to basically the tough guy. That was about carrying large things in the employ of local businesses, shall we say. And, you know, that is a theme you'll see a lot in, you know, in, and it, you know, try not, you know, try, it is a, it, there's a lot of that kind of themes and subject matter in the Corrido Tumbado's music. But like I said, it's it's all in this like older traditional kind of ballad style, like all like almost entirely all in like 3/4 time even, you know? And, but yeah, like when you watch the music videos, like I said, you'll see a lot of like, you know, the first words that I only understand little bits of Spanish, but you know, I understand what Kalashnikov means. So that gives you an idea of what some of the lyrics are about and stuff. But, you know, over top of like, just like this really nice, just like this really nice ballad. And yeah, so I figured what I did is like for the show notes, I've got kind of like this dork, like my dorky little book report on the topic that I put together.
I don't think there's anything dorky about it, dude. I think this is extremely interesting. Yeah, man.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, I picked 5 artists in particular that kind of jumped out to me.
Cool.
That like, I don't know. Like I said, I feel like it. Anyways, like I said, Peso Pluma is the first one for sure. Like cool. I said, he's kind of been the big pop crossover artist from this whole subgenre and one of the older artists at 24. Like I said, it's like a pretty young, pretty new genre with like a lot of pretty young artists. And like, you know, I'll admit, I felt kind of weird just being like, oh no, this dude's totally 17. It's like rapping in this video right now. But like, you know, still it's like, it's cool seeing, you know, what the kids are doing and taking like from, you know, bits and pieces from different styles. Like I realized when I was trying to like, you know, get my thoughts together for my show notes on the topic, what I realized is like, you know, there's been a lot of attempts to kind of cross over hip hop and country music that have never quite stuck. And these guys have managed to find the way to cross over hip hop and country, but it's just a different country's country for the most part. Cause it is like, you know, like the Corrido style, like, you know, if you hear it, you would recognize the style of just kind of like, I'm not going to try, but anyways, you know what I mean? Like it does draw on a lot of very traditional, you know, influence, but you know, with songs titled like El Drip and things like that, but still just like, it's like I said, there's not much here. It's like, you know, I hear a lot of really good takes on sort of well-trod genres a lot of the time, and I don't hear a lot. Yeah, I don't know, like there's not a lot that comes my way that I find like super exciting and new a lot. And yeah, watching this guy's set, I was just like, I'm captivated, this is cool. And I spent
this
the past
of
couple
the new. Yeah,
exactly, this is of the new, and I find it really interesting. So yeah, like I put together a list of like 5 artists that, I mean, like I said, it's only been a couple of weeks. I have very surface level knowledge of the genre for the most part, but like folks that stood out to me in looking into it right. So far. And yeah, Peso Pluma is definitely the first one. His most recent album came out last year, Genesis. It's really good. He's been crossing over into like doing almost like, yeah, crossing, like he's doing like more like reggaeton and like almost like EDM stuff now. Like those sort of artists are starting to like ask him to do guest verses because he's so popular in Mexico and abroad. And he's been doing a lot of touring in the US in cities that have like big Spanish speaking populations. And like when you see his set, he's got like, you know, video projections in the background of like all these like, you know, kind of like more traditional like country artists and like Corrido artists and stuff over the years. And like more, you know, a lot of folks that are considered more kind of like rootsy kind of like of the people as well. And then, you know, of course, leading up to him as, you know, the scion of that lineage in his whole presentation. But just, I was really impressed at like, yeah, just the whole package. And yeah, so Peso Pluma is definitely my first pick. So I'll turn that over. The rest of them I'll have less much to say probably. But yeah.
No, that's cool. I mean, it was important to sort of get the overview of the genre and the personal context, which has caused you to dive into something. It's always exciting when you discover like a whole new area or a subgenre that you can really get with, right? So
yeah.
Yeah, that's dope, man. Sounds fascinating. So I'm just going to stand up and reach into the box of random download codes. I'm going to take 2 because I'm going to choose one and then throw away the other. Or maybe speak to them both. Okay. What do I got here? I have something here which doesn't have, it just has the code. Wait a minute. Sorry. It does say at the very bottom. Okay. Two very different ones from the box. Simon and Garfunkel's Greatest Hits. I was struggling to see the print at the bottom, as opposed to the Jesus Lizard Goat on Touch and Go Records. Touch and Go Records. I said Touch and Go Records. I mean, you could be touching a goat, but anyway. Right. Well, I mean, as far as these both things go, I think the fact that, like, I went so far as to, like, actually obtain a new copy of this, you know, from Amazon or whatever, it does kind of speak to my sort of lack of critical discernment, shall we say, in terms of what I was buying. Because, I mean, that's just sort of like, if there's ever something that you could just find on your streaming service or YouTube or whatever, I mean, that's most certainly it. Now, that's not to say anything disparaging about the songcraft of Paul Simon or Simon Garfunkel whatsoever. And in fact, as a greatest hits package, my goodness, I mean, you know, their early to mid 60s kind of stuff, or, you know, maybe it was more like mid to 60, mid to, I mean, you know, it's a thing where if you can sort of appreciate a certain kind of songwriting, and, you know, for what it is, then there's just a lot of good stuff to be had there. So it's one of those things where it's like, am I going to try and own any of their other records? No. Like, maybe Bridge Under Troubled Water, maybe. But the point is, the fact that I, you know, have this as a something that came with a physical purchase, a new physical purchase that I no longer own, that's made its way out at a fraction of the cost, sort of speaks to a certain thinking at the time when I was going through resources in a way that I wouldn't be now. So that's on the other side of it. I don't know that I have as much to say about Goat. I will say this is like out of the, you know, 70%, 60% of my vinyl holdings that I chose to, you know, remove from owning, giving them homes and, you know, finagling myself into my one hotel room and one air flight kind of lifestyle that I'm committed to for a while. I actually, Goat is, it's the first one. I'm just trying to even remember which one, right? Dan, how's your knowledge on the Jesus Lizard? I think I know which one this is. I think it's their first one.
I think you're right.
I'm going to have to Google this, folks. Sorry. Just because, yeah. I'm going to feel, cause it's really quite Jesus. I'm going to know by the cover. I know all of them by the cover. The Jesus Lizard Goat. And their names are like, they're all just these one word monosyllable kind of things. Okay. This is not their first record. Listen, I was at the point where I was getting, I owned all the Jesus Lizard records. I owned all of them. And I could say that about a number of bands. I could say that about Jawbreaker, Hot Water Music, not quite Fugazi, but almost. There's a number of bands. And so my philosophy, such as it has been, is that at least one or two records from every artist, regardless of what they are, has to go. And it's not that I liked it, you know, badly. It's not that I thought poorly of you, dear Goat, with the psychedelic naked lady on the cover. It was really, you know, for me, every Pure, I was confusing it. Their first record's called Pure, and it also has a psychedelic naked lady.
Okay.
So that's kind of why I was conflating that in my mind. Go figure. I also got rid of that one. So I kept, I guess, three and sort of jettisoned two. And it's really just because, like, when I'm getting rid of a record, I'm not, like, going to recoup more than a fraction of it. But what I'm saving is the cost of getting it into an Air Canada bag and paying the fee for an additional bag, an additional oversized bag. So I sort of add that to the cost that I'm recouping by shifting this out. So, again, it's like I've got some of their physical media. I've got their other three ones, whatever. I'm going to rock the shit out of them once I get a record player again, because I'm definitely selling my record player before I go. Again, just to keep with the Air Canada philosophy. And, yeah, I freaking love the Jesus Lizard. And I'm so glad they're still somewhat active. I saw them like on one of those festivals of like old punk bands that, you know, they seem to do now. I don't remember which one. So that's not helpful at all, but, it's like they are playing it, like, right?
Riot Fest or something, maybe?
All the bands are playing this one that I'm thinking of. Like, okay. Even the freaking Lords of Arms.
Oh, sure. I think I know. There's one. Yeah, yeah. It's one that's coming up soon. Yeah, I know.
It's exactly. Coming up soon. It's. I want to say it's in California, but fuck, it's probably not.
Yeah, I know. It's on the end of my tongue, and I know so exactly like, the one like, you're talking about. Yeah.
Friggin' bands.
And yeah.
It's a little bit just like Bad Religion and Descendants play everything. Getting like some pretty tight friggin'. Like Fear, you know, is going to,
yeah,
know, shit like that. Right. So I was like, oh good. They're on like, you know, 2/3 of the way down, but it's like very discernibly. So apparently David Yao is still alive because who the fuck knows, you know, and capable of, you know, and Dwayne Dennison, I mean, he's been hanging with Mike Patton. Mike Patton's been doing, you know, Mr. Bungle an awful lot. So I'm sure, you know, the Tomahawk stuff, you don't hear about it as much. Right. So like, okay, strike up the Jesus Lizard reunion. Good Lord. I'm all for it. But in conclusion, I had to jettison something and, regrettably it was goat. But, this is just a reminder to myself. I'm like, oh, well, I could remind myself to stream this on my phone if I wanted to right now or not. Anyway, dude, I got two in there, so feel free to do the same or not, you know, let's...
Like I said, all of mine kind of, most of mine are kind of like, I realized I did have another, just if we're just talking random picks, there was another sure. thing that I wanted to mention
yeah.
outside of all this that I thought was kind of cool coming up. But yeah, I mean, just to run through some of the other artists I've been checking out after... Sure. Just my introduction to the whole Corridos Tumbados thing through checking out Peso Pluma's set is first one is Nathaniel Cano, who is the guy who kind of, you know, the guy who first kind of coined the name for the genre with an EP that he put out in 2019. Like I said, all these dudes are pretty young. He's like 23 years old. He was like a child prodigy. Like playing like tradition, started playing like traditional folk music when he was like 7 years old. And then, you know, by the time he was in his teens, you know, in his late teens, was like starting to mix like these like traditional narrative ballads with like modern hip hop and trap influences. And yeah, his single Soil Diablo was, that was kind of like, you know, the ground zero for the genre, I guess. And like, it starts out with like him just saying like Corridos Tumbados as like a, you know, a drop at the beginning or whatever. And, you know, they ended up doing a remix with like Bad Bunny doing a verse on it, even though it was still over this, like I said, this traditional like acoustic ballad form. And yeah, like I just, that's one thing that I find so interesting about it all is just like, yeah, that it's just like, not to be like, you don't see guitars much these days, but, you know, just seeing the music and the way it's presented, but with just like, hey, you know, some acoustic guitars. Like I said, sometimes brass instruments, like a lot of the artists have like brass instruments as well. Some just guitars and bass, you know, a lot of stand-up bass sometimes.
Love the stand-up bass, man.
Like, oh, yeah, exactly. That's
just menace and resonance and just bad attitude to anything you want to throw it in. It's just, like, that's good stuff there.
Yeah, and a killer guitar intro is like was one of the tropes of the genre that I definitely appreciate. Like, just sort of like a good, just like these will be the big themes you'll be hearing through the, you know, through the song, kind of guitar, you know, lead at the top that you know, I quite enjoy. But yeah, Natanael Cano, like, is the guy that kind of coined the name of the genre, with, you know, and yeah, with his single Soil Diablo. He's done a few songs with Peso Pluma and like a lot of the other big artists in the whole subgenre as well. And like I said, he kind of, you know, if this was New Jack Swing, like the mix of like rap and R&B from the late 80s, he would be the Teddy Riley.
Whoa!
And
that's a hell of a metaphor, my dude. That's
And yeah, like some of his standout songs that like of his that I checked out, like I said, Soil Diablo is really good. He's got this one song that's just like a straight up old school country ballad. That was like his last single that he put out at the end of 2023. It's called the Omavoy Otava is the name of the song or whatever. That's just, like I said, it's just like this straight up like old school hurtin' country ballad, but you know, sung by this little dude in streetwear with like a face tattoo. And like, yeah, he's just, like I said, he seems to be like one of the folks that really kind of draws some like a lot of like old traditional styles while still keeping that, like, you know, like I said, like the trap flavor or whatever, Timbado flavor, I guess. I feel like I said, I'm trying to not seem like a weird tourist or like I'm fetishizing it in any strange way. It's just like, this is a really interesting genre of music to me that I hadn't really heard before too much, that, like I said, that seems to be on the rise a lot. I was checking out like the NPR's like Latin music program that they have, Alt Latino. And they did like the sort of three-part documentary they did on kind of like the break, the crossover of like the Mexican regional umbrella of genres into the U.S. charts that I thought was really interesting. That, yeah, like I said, a lot of it's people that, you know, sort of maybe their families from there or they grew up there and moved away and that kind of thing, that are like excited to see, you know, like I said, a cool rock star playing this like music with like ties to their traditional while also bringing in the modern. And yeah, like I said, Natanael Cano, that Omavoy Otava or whatever, that's a really great song. He's got a song called AMG with Peso Pluma and a younger guy named Gabito Balastros, who's kind of like his one of his little proteges, little proteges in the genre. I guess they've got a few songs. A lot of the artists will do. I mean, it's like in hip hop where you get a lot of people doing guest verses on other people's songs. It's like you'll get like two or three singers doing songs together pretty often, from what I've seen. And like, you know, it's not like it's, you definitely tell there's kind of different camps in certain respects. Like the guys I've talked about so far, like Peso Pluma, Natanael Cano, and this Gabito Balestros guy that's kind of like their protege. Like, they all work together a lot. And then there's like another label called Street Mob Records that's kind of like the top indie label putting the genre out. But they have, it's a band called Fuerza Regida, who are actually from Southern California. But, you know, performing all in Spanish, like mostly for like the Mexican market. And a young guy named Chino Pacas, who's only like 16, 17 years old, but, you know, like a phenomenal singer and like, you know, with some pretty gnarly songs, you know, for a young guy. That, yeah, that's like, it's like I said, I find all this really interesting, but like as you know, someone who's like much older and much removed culturally from a lot of what's going on and a lot of what the folks are talking about, you know, I'm trying to like, you know, so to like read up on things and not just be like, wow, that's cool and weird. But it's just like, I've really enjoyed the music so far, for what I've been checking out. And there's some, like I said, some artists that have really stood out for me. One other artist that I wanted to mention from that whole umbrella of genres, who's like kind of a little more on like, I guess I was thinking of him as like the LL Cool J. There's a guy named Javi, who's actually from Phoenix, Arizona. And he started out as more of like Tumbado style, I guess, and then was in a really bad car accident and to the point where, like, you know, he had like facial injuries and didn't think he'd be able to sing at all. And during that time, kind of rethought his artistic approach and decided to mostly just make songs for the ladies, as it were.
But life is like, worth living for, sir.
Exactly. And, you know, is another like a fairly young artist, but like, you know, seems to be the one that, yeah, like that's, you know, where a lot of the bigger Corito Tabatos artists that have, you know, that have been checking out, you know, a lot of them do have that, like, you know, I guess what they call like the bellicose influence of, like, you know, like the tough guy stuff involved. But this guy Javi, he seems to be like the like I said, he's the LL Cool J, as it were. And
he's going to knock you.
Yeah, Corazon de Piedra is just one of these, like, it's like, wow. And yeah, I've just got like a little mix of probably like 15, 20 tracks I've been listening to like in rotation lately, just like being like, yeah, and like adding to as I, you know, check out more stuff that just has been like a neat little, like, something new to look into these days. Sure. Like a cool little, yeah, like a subgenre I was unfamiliar with that I find pretty impressive. That, like I said, I really think it's cool, like the mix of like older styles and like modern influences. And what parts come from where? Because, like, even if you just isolated the vocals for a lot of the songs, you could see someone, like, throwing some auto-tune on it and putting it on, like, maybe, like, you know, modern, more... It's, like, more, like, you know, sort of, like, English, American hip-hop kind of, you know, your auto-tune sad robot. like, you could see some of that kind of fitting into it, but then just with this whole other arrangement, it takes on like a totally different flavor. And, you know, it's a lot more like, not all these dudes have perfect voices. Like Peso Pluma's pretty, like, he's kind of nasally, and like, you know, like Chino Pacas, the younger guy, like, he's got kind of like a weird little raspy voice and stuff, but like, you know, so it's not all like perfect, you know, perfect singing on this, like, sort of like narrative ballad style, but like, you know, it all works. I think it's pretty cool. So that was my group of several. I do have one other besides this that's short. That I'll just turn over to you.
Yeah, no, man. It sounds, again, like a very, I mean, what I just can tell based on some of the adjectives you've used and references, the shit sounds danceable.
But like danceable without any percussion, you know, like.
Yeah, no, man. So I think that's kind of like, you wonder at being like a tourist or, you know, culturally appropriating something or that doesn't belong to you or whatever. I would say, you know, if the shit grooves and you relate to that groove, exactly. Then it's
appreciating.
What else do you know? Need to enjoy some music?
Exactly. So, just trying to appreciate it, but, you know, like, learn about, yeah, like, just sort of trying to see where they're at, too. It was also an excuse to try and learn a little more Spanish as well, because I only know tiny bits, mostly from, like, trying to figure out Los Crudos songs, actually.
Well, I mean, again, you know, it's like, it's cool that this is a youth-driven, you know, cultural thing. It's a cool aspect of it, non-English language. And, yeah, man, it sounds like they're pretty dialed into some, as you say, contemporary cool aspects of culture and traditional cool aspects of culture. So... cool. Well, while we were discursing about that a little bit, I did reach into the magic box of random download codes just to see what the story is. I've got two in my hand here. And this one here says, okay, this one literally has nothing on it, so I'm calling bullocks on that. It says download code. And it's not even in fine print, so whatever. I've got a box of junk. You're going in the box of junk, whatever you were. Okay, Avail Front Porch Stories. That's a good one. I didn't keep it, but it's a good one. It's okay. Versus okay, and PJ Harvey, Rid of Me. okay? Two pairings. First of all, I got to say, PJ Harvey Rid of Me is definitely in the list of things that I was not going to keep, that I could not part with. It's I've kept it, and like, again, that was one of those things where it's like I went through and I'm like, I've got 9 PJ Harvey records, and as much as they're all awesome, you know, it's like I have to shift some weight in order, you know, to, so I'm like, if I ended up getting rid of a box set, which was a bit of a drag. But what I definitely, Rid of Me was like the one that I, remember hearing about PJ Harvey, like Spin Magazine, 1993, pre-internet. And she just sort of seemed to come in with, you know, the Lollapalooza, you know, first wave kind of, I mean, British singer, obviously. And I mean, I'm not even going to be like, this is who she is if you don't know, because if you don't know, then, I mean, I like to think everybody knows who PJ Harvey is. And in conclusion, like, I even sometimes have trouble differentiating songs on, like, her albums. Like, it's like, name, you know, this, that, or the other song. I'm like, I don't throw on her records to, you know, listen to a pop song or whatever. I throw on her records to have, like, a emotional experience, because she's just so primal, and there just seems to be, like, such a thin, you know, line between what she is feeling and what she manages to express musically, lyrically, but, like, especially just with, like, her singing presence, you know, and again, it's just, anyway, I have gone on about PJ Harvey. I will again, surely. I guess I could say some nice things about Avail. Avail's rad. Richmond, Virginia. Again, I mean, it's like, it's not like, oh, you just, I've always enjoyed Avail when I first discovered them. And again, this is a band that got like 7 really awesome, good records. I can't say that there's any bad Avail record that I'm aware of. There's a couple that I don't own that I would have liked to own. Like if I had Satiate, their first one, I would still keep that. If I had 4 AM Friday, I would still keep that. And you know, you get into the later part of the catalog and it's like, well, you know, it's like, is it this or is it Over the James? And Over the James is just such a frigging classic on every single level for like contemporary late 90s punk that you could even want to fathom. I mean, just unbridled energy, excellent execution on every level. And I guess one thing that I really enjoy, apart from the fact that Tim Barry continues to sing and tour a lot, both solo, but the Avail, it seems like once a year, every year, they get together for Over the James Fest on, I guess it's James Island down there in Virginia, whatever the hell the venue is. And every year it's sick. They reform, you know, they get back off hiatus or whatever, because they're not putting out music anymore that I'm aware of. But they still, you know, they get together and perform that show and then maybe a few other shows sort of around the same time, you know, do like sort of a local tour. I think Bo, you know, the co-vocalist or what do you, I don't know what you call Bo in the mix of that.
I always remember them referring to him as the cheerleader.
Right.
Because he would just kind of like jump around in a kilt and then occasionally do backup vocals, like
agitator,
and like balance on the bass drum, you know, and that sort of thing. And
full on chaotic, frenetic energy. Anyway, he's an essential part of the band and he lives, God, I think he's like in Costa Rica or something like that.
Okay.
Family. So it's like they're not, but every year they get back together. And if that was just one of those things where I had buckets of money for recreational travel, I'd fly down to see that. I'd go see Fest in Gainesville. You know, that would be such a sick time for sure. And in conclusion, those are the last two that I pulled from my box. And I don't know that I've got necessarily any more, but I guess I could potentially speak to something on the way out. We're getting kind of on the hour here. You mentioned that you had another artist you wanted to speak to.
Yeah, I had one other thing I just want to mention quickly that was not necessarily something that's new to me, but something, it was like a new thing by an artist I liked that was also in it. You know, sort of the precursor to something else new from them, which is the Australian band Speed just put out sort of the advanced single for their first full-length album that's going to be coming out in July. Speed put out they had a really good EP called Gang Called Speed a couple years, I think in 2022. And they've been kind of breaking more and more into trying to get to North America more often. I don't know. It's sonically, they're pretty tough sounding hardcore, but everything, like the band, like they make a point of documenting, like they do a lot of, like they make little documentaries every time they go on tour, and they make a point of touring places like, you know, like Malaysia and Singapore and that from Australia, because a lot of the members of the band, like, are sort of like first, their family are all kind of like recent immigrants to Australia from, you know, different countries in that area too. They just make a point of just touring the countries that just might not get a lot of hardcore shows or a lot of like international hardcore bands, you know, and have also been trying to like get into like doing festivals in North America more and more often. And like every piece of media about the band, they just give off the vibe of like somebody just gave a bunch of golden retrievers guitars and like set them out in the mosh pit. Like that's the best way I can describe it. The advanced single for the new album is a song called Real Life Love that like they made a video for it that's just like, you know, bros broing out for 2.5 minutes and like being good friends together and like, you know, lifting weights and playing guitars and like hanging out with their friends and, you know, talking about how, you know, being positive and how much they love their friends and all that good, like, you know, young people hardcore stuff. And it was just like, I can dig this. It's the kind of thing that, like, you know, it's pretty well trodden territory, I guess you could say.
Positive mental attitude, man.
Exactly. Your positive mental attitudes and whatnot. But, like, they just have, like, I don't know. It's just, they're a very charismatic band, is the best way I can describe it. And, like, I really enjoy their, you know.
Speed,
yes. Sometimes they refer to themselves as a gang called Speed, hence the name of the EP. They're from Sydney. Yes, exactly. They're from Sydney, Australia. Their debut albums, their debut full length is coming out in July called Only One Mode. And like I said, they just released a single for it. Their Gang Called Speed EP from a couple years ago on Flat Spot Records is, you know, it's something I've been listening to and really enjoying for a while. They released a video for a song off that called Not That Nice that, you know, is about the ever popular hardcore subject matter of beating up racists, specifically Australian racists. Hence the name Not That Nice. In the most sort of positive way possible, I guess you could say. And there's one thing that I found out kind of interesting about the band is their singer is actually also a professional classical musician. He's a classical flautist and like teaches teaches classical music, like is like a professional flautist, like doing performance and also teaching in like, you know, fancy like music academies and that sort of thing. And then, you know, singing in this, like, tough guy, kick him in the face hardcore band on the side.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's
really and it's cool. Just like, yeah. And they've apparently they're one of Travis Barker's favorite new bands, to the point of whichever Kardashian he's dating was wearing one of their shirts, apparently, at one point. Wait, and it caused a minor stir on the internet. What?
He's married to one of them.
Oh, married now. Okay, yeah. Apparently after they went to go see Speed together, or she was with him at one of their shows, she ended up wearing one of their shirts, like out somewhere in the wild, and you know, the internet freaked out. But yeah, like I said, it seems like, you know, there's Australia's produced like some pretty cool bands in the past little while, like you know, of varying styles, like, you know, like Emil and the Sniffers, who I kind of mentioned in passing last episode, and like the Chats. Oh, yes. Who have really been enjoying the Chats. Just remind me of a band that would be playing at Bugaboo Creek. Honestly,
I watched one of their videos, and Jesus, yes, to that.
Yeah, I was just like, how does Matt Gay have a group of children in Australia somewhere? Like,
right.
That was the best. That was my thought on the Chats. Yeah, definitely check them out as well if you have not already. Yeah,
they're sick, is what they are.
Yes,
sick.
Exactly. So I guess my last pick is kind of two Australian bands, because I would definitely just throw the Chats on there anywhere, because they're, you know, like, I remember like Gone Smoko getting kind of popular when that first came out. And then, yeah, just everything I've heard from them since has been great. So, yeah, that's pretty much all I have there, with a little guest appearance from Henry, my dog, for a moment there.
Always yeah. A pleasure, good Henry, sir. Yeah.
And yeah, that's about what I had.
Radical. Well, as a matter of fact, I don't have anything to add to necessarily this format. I may, in the notes, of course, dig out a couple more. All I can say is that this episode has amply met my requirement to do no preparation whatsoever. And in fact, leverage that lack of preparation as a gimmick vis-a-vis the open format. So, like, I'm just calling that a win. If you could see past the squid that have been falling on me for the past hour or so, you would see a bunch of open suitcases and then a couple of vinyl boxes. So one of my goals over the next day or two is to, like, merge them together and then just get them packed and then just leave them packed until it's time to go to where and whatever. So in the true appreciation of downsizing and minimizing, I have enjoyed this open format episode here quite a bit, pal. It's been conducive to the overall endeavor, I might even say.
Yeah, it's been fun to... Thanks. It's been fun to just sort of, you know, talk about a new thing I've been checking out, and, you know, some other fun stuff, and yeah, a nice little open format. Anyways.
Yeah.
See you around.
Till next time, folks. Take care, everybody.